Okay. Wonderful. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Markus Huber of Huber Winery. My name is Antoinette Londejan from Cork and Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'd like to introduce today's presenter, Markus Huber. Markus was born into a viticulturally focused wine growing family, and he represents the 10th generation of land stewards. At an early age, while assisting his grandfather with harvest, Markus discovered his love for nature, soil, and the soulful science of winemaking. He started making wine at this young age and devoted his life totally to viticulture and vinification by attending Klosterneuburg University and studying enology. After his vocational training in Austria, Markus vinified 2 harvests in South Africa before committing himself to his family wine producing business. Year after year, his aim is to vinify excellent wines from the best possible grape material. Markus was awarded Winemaker of the Year by Falstaff in 2015. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we will get to them time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. Markus, please introduce yourself and your beautiful winery.
Yes, a warm welcome also from my side. As you have heard already, my name is Markus Huber. I'm the current owner of Weingut Huber in the Triesental. And before I go ahead and give you a presentation about my beautiful area and our winery, I would like to show you a short video to start with a good introduction and to give you a feeling about the landscape. Hopefully it works. Thank you. So did you hear the tone, the music as well on the video, or you just saw the video?
Just the images.
Ah, okay, because I also didn't hear. Okay, sorry for that. Anyway, so yeah, welcome to Weingutshuber. We are located in the Triesenthal appellation, and here is my bio. I'm 41 years old. And as Antoinette already told you, I studied enology in Klosterneuburg in Austria, and I'm the 10th generation within my family who is devoted to wine. And currently I'm the head winemaker and also the CEO of the company. My younger brother, Michael, he's also involved in the business now. And he is also doing part of the vinification as well as the majority of the viticulture. As you have already said to the audience, I was awarded Austria's Best Winemaker of the Year in 2015 by the most important wine magazine in Austria, the Falstaff. And this is a picture from the Hofburg. It's the place actually where the president stays. So it would be like the White House in Washington, D.C. And you can see we even have wine tastings there, at least before Corona. So we'll see if this is going to happen again. Yeah, we also achieved an award as Best Winery of Austria in terms of export the year after. A few facts about the winery. So we are 100% family owned, no co-investors, but this is quite common in Austria. Most wineries are family owned. We are among the top three exporters of premium Austrian wine to the United States, to the UK, and to Japan. And we are focusing on cool climate wines because this is what we find in the Triesenthal in terms of the climate conditions. All our vineyards are farmed and certified organic. And the whole winery is also certified for sustainable production. Sustainable production that includes many more aisles than just the farming. It also includes the use of electricity, the wastewater management. And we are about to go probably energy RTAG with next year, because we are investing a lot of money into solar panels to produce all our own electricity. And we have our own well where we have our own water. So this is only a short step for us ahead. Yeah, I already told you, these are our three top export markets. About the winery itself, I mean, I took over in 2000 after my studies, a small mixed agricultural business. We have had 4 hectares of vineyards, and the main income for my parents and for my family was a so-called Heuriger. A Heuriger is like a farm-to-table restaurant where you are only allowed to serve your own produce, like your own meat, your own vegetables. And this is what we did. We have had a mixed agriculture. We had our own cornfields, we fed our own pigs and chicken, and we ran this little Heuriger 4 to 5 times a year. And this is where my parents sold all the wine we produced at the Heuriger, at the restaurant, and what people bought at the winery and for takeaway. This obviously has changed after my studies. I went to South Africa twice, and I really learned there how international focused wineries do with export. And in those days, about 20 years ago in Austria, this was pretty uncommon. I mean, there have been wineries who already exported wine, but it was just at the beginning. And I saw that in a country like South Africa, where there's a very low domestic consumption, how those wineries did market their wine. And I thought, okay, this is the way to go, because in Austria, also in those days, the market already was quite competitive. And I knew I could speak a little bit of English, and I knew how to approach different markets. And this is how I started and how I tried to build my winery. So today we farm the 55 hectares of estate vineyards. And those 55 hectares, they are spread on more than 120 different individual parcels. And we saw in the video how diverse the landscape is. And actually, the landscape is very similar, I would compare it to Burgundy, for those of you who have been to Burgundy, because we have the riverbed formed by the Triassic River, where you have the agricultural area where the corn and the wheat and everything is grown. Then where the slopes starts to rise, we have the villages located. And actually only behind the villages where it gets steeper, this is where the vineyards are planted. And then on top of the vineyards you have as a natural protection, a forest. The vineyards are located on hillside because the Triassic has a really cool continental influenced climate because we are bordering the Danube River in the north and the Alps in the south. And this leads in many years to late spring frosts, and therefore as a natural frost protection, the vineyards were moved hillside because the cold air runs down the hills and then settles at the bottom of the valley. Okay, a few more words about the Triassic itself. I always use the comparison, if Austria would be Burgundy, Triassic would be Chablis. Why? Because Triassic has a unique soil composition. The Triassic, here on the map you can see it as the purple area in the inner circle. It's bordering the Danube River in the north and the last foothills of the Alps in the south. The Triassic River, after which the valley is named today, once was a much bigger river than the Danube about 10 million years ago. And in the whole area here in the blue circle, there was an ocean, like the so-called Paratetis. And when the Alps started to rise, all the water which was in that ocean was pushed towards the north, towards the Danube valley. And this was an ongoing process for about maybe 10 to 20,000 years. We've had warmer periods, colder periods. And over time, the water became less and less. And of course, in the riverbed of the water, there was a lot of alpine stone material transported. And when the river became smaller, those stones and sediments settled on the side banks of the Triassic Valley. And this is why we have as a mother rock everywhere the limestone, because the Alps contain out of limestone. And this is unique because on the northern side of the Danube, you have the so-called Bohemian Massif. This is a completely different geology. There they have gneiss and granite soils. And as I said, we are the only area where you can find limestone soils, and where Grüne Veltliner and Riesling, which are the two main grape varieties planted in the area, are planted on limestone. And this is reflected very much in the wines because the chalk, the major component in the limestone, characterizes the style of the wines a lot. We have a very focused, precise, elegant, mineral-driven white wine style, and this is what the Triassic stands for. What you also can see, we have a continental climate and we are heavily influenced by the Alps. The two main grape varieties are Grüne Veltliner and Riesling. They are also written in our DSC appellation system. So these are the only two grape varieties where we can use the appellation Triassic on the label. All the other grape varieties, no matter if it's a Zweigelt or a Sauvignon Blanc, even if it's grown in the Triassic, it has to be declassified to Lower Austria. What also is, I think, worth mentioning, we have a very high annual rainfall, about 600 millimeters per square meter. And this is also very important because in the last couple of years, it became drier and drier all over, also in Europe. And to have a good water supply is very helpful for the growth of the vines. This is an example of the limestone soil which you can find in the area. We have two types of the limestone. We have the normal white colored limestone, and this is a particular rock formation. It's actually from our best vineyard site, and geologically it's a dolomite because it's a limestone, and the red color comes from iron and manganese components in the soil. And this I will talk later maybe a little bit about the wine which comes from this particular soil. Yeah, here are a few impressions about the Priesthal. As I said, you can see here in the picture in the right corner, some of the terraces and also with a view on the Danube. And where it's steep, we have terraces, and where it's not so steep, we have the vineyards on rolling hills. But the picture in the left corner, on the left side on the top, you can see actually just where the hills start to rise. You have at the bottom, you can see the cornfields, then the first vineyards on these rolling hills, and then higher up, it would go onto the terraces. This is a very good picture which demonstrates the close distance to the Alps. At the background, you can see mountains which are about 7,000 feet in height, and they are about 40 minutes drive away from the Triesenthal. This is a vineyard picture which was taken in March. And you can see, actually, even now, we still haven't had bud break this year. And from my house, I can see the snow-covered mountains every morning. So you can really, it gives you an idea that it's a cool climate. Yeah, and this is now going further up the hill. So you can see those tiny little micro terraces. And of course, it's not like in the south of France that the winery owns a full hill. For instance, on this particular hillside, which is our West Hill, the Berg Vineyard, we have seven or eight different parcels. So it's a very fragmented landscape and also ownership. Yeah. About the estates, about the varieties on the estate. We are heavily focusing on the production of white wine. Nevertheless, we make some rosé and a little bit of red wine as well, but the majority is white wine, and we're focusing on the two main grape varieties in the appellation of Triesenthal: Grüne Veltliner, which stands for about 70% of our production, and Riesling, which stands for 20% of the production. And yeah, maybe for those of you who are a little bit deeper into the Austrian wine industry, why, it's a question I'm raising to myself, and I also will give you the answer. Why is Grüne Veltliner and Riesling, why are these two grape varieties, the two dominating grape varieties actually all over, no matter if it's in the Wachau, in the Kremstal, Triesenthal, Kamptal? Because until the 1950s, the majority of the vineyards in Austria was planted as mixed field plants. The German wording for it is gemischter Satz. These gemischter Satz wines, they still have a tradition in Vienna, but actually the reality was that these gemischter Satz vineyards were planted all over in Austria, because this was a natural insurance for all the vintners to have a drinkable wine every year. In those days, about 50 years ago, actually now 70 years ago, the climate was still much rougher. And by having a mixed field blend with different grape varieties, with different ripening points, every year they had the ability to have a good balance in the wine to make it drinkable. Because in those days, the major focus was to have wines with low enough acidity to drink them. This is actually has changed a lot. Now, actually, we put a focus on having enough acidity in the wines, because to have still the good freshness which Austrian wines in general are well known for. And until the 1950s, basically actually until the Second World War was over, all the vineyards were planted as field plants, and everything was still done by the horse. So there were rarely any tractors available. And also after the and only after the Second World War, where many of the vineyards were destroyed and had to be replanted, and with the so let's call it industrial revolution also in the farming, when the first tractors were available, the people replanted the vineyards, but they planted them so that they were also able to farm them with the tractor, because it was clear that the labor will not be available in that amount, physical labor like it was in those days, in the future. And at this moment, the vintners, they had to raise themselves the question, okay, which are the grape varieties which work really well all over the years in our area and have a good yield and deliver good quality? And they could answer the question very easily, because the most all the wineries in those days were really small, so the vintners were in the vineyard every day, and they knew exactly that Grüne Veltliner and Riesling, which are actually two grape varieties which have completely different needs, that they will cover all the hills and produce of course on different spots, but produce a very good quality if you plant the Riesling on the top of the hill, because Riesling is looking for soils and sites with a lower water supply and actually a drier type of soil. And on the other hand, the Grüne Veltliner, which is a very vigorous grape variety, is looking for soils which have more fertility and also more nutrient and water supply, and this is found further down at the bottom of the hill. So the Grüne Veltliner was planted from the bottom of the hill to the medium part, and the Riesling was planted up on the top parcel of the hill. And so, and since the landscape is pretty similar all over here in the area along Danube, these two grape varieties became so important in all the wine growing regions. Yeah. As I said, we also have planted some red grapes. We have a tiny amount of Pinot Noir. We have some Zweigelt. Pinot Noir we have planted in those vineyards where we have an extremely high chalk content, where we cannot grow any Grüne Veltliner Riesling, because the wines, they just would die. And then we have some other grape varieties like Gelber Muscateller, Sauvignon Blanc, a little bit of Weißburgunder, which is known internationally as Pinot Blanc. So a good mix, but you can see the focus is on the two main grape varieties. Okay, we start out with the sparkling rosé, right? To taste. Yeah. So maybe I speak before we go ahead and taste the wines. I want to let you know about why we farm organically. I think if you think consequently, into the future, you know, myself, I'm just probably running the estate for 30 years, but I'm just a very small parcel in the bigger puzzle. And so I have to act responsible for future generations. And the capital we have as vintners or as wine growers, this is our soil. So we have to make sure to find a way of farming where we have the least impact, because there always is an impact, because you know it's an economy basically, and so there is an impact on the land. But I think organic farming and also biodynamic farming, where we're also practicing some biodynamic elements, this is the way to go forward to make sure to create an environment by making sure that all the species and plants which are naturally there in the vineyard, that they can create a microorgan cosmos in the vineyard, and that the strength of the individual wine will be better after you switch to organic or biodynamic farming. And this is what we see. By using different practices and different methods, what we just did recently is we brought back also animals to our vineyards. We have an organic sheep farmer here in the area, which brings his sheep in the winter month into our vineyards, and they cut the lawn for free. And on the other hand, they deliver the dung for free. And this is very good because it's not only about the natural fertilizer, it's also about the biodiversity, all about all the microorganisms you bring back into the vineyards. And on the other hand, just this year, we also have started we will bring out bees into our vineyards. And they also, you know, they will be fertile for other plants. And by basically increasing the biodiversity, we will also strengthen the individual wine plants. And I think this is all about, if the wines are stronger and fitter, we will need less spraying. Even if we spray only with copper and sulfur, we have to spray because we have diseases in the vineyards. And the better and the fitter the wines are, the better it will be in the long run for the future. And also for further generations, because we have also, I mean, I'm the 10th generation, and maybe if the climate allows it, maybe there will be many more to come. And therefore, we have a big responsibility for the future. Good. Then I will talk about the first wine, which is our... Okay, now maybe I will go ahead with this because I think this is sometimes not so easy to understand. So within Austria, you have different DSC appellations. You will find them in the Wachau, in the Kremstal, in the Kamptal, and so you do in the Triesental. And here you have actually the pyramid of origin, where you can also get an understanding what are the different levels of wines which we allowed to label as Triesental. So on the basic level, we have the so-called Gebietsweine or regional wines, where we can label them just with Triesental and maybe with a brand name. So basically, this is like a Burgundy wine. If you go to the next level, and this will also appear on the labels in the future, you have the so-called Ortsweine or village wines. So these are, again, you can label the wine with Triesental. The only two grape varieties which are allowed are Riesling or Grüne Veltliner. But then you can write, if the wine is coming from a particular village, you can call it an Ortswein. But it has to be from a defined commune in the Triesental. And then, of course, the top level is are the single vineyard wines. The German word for it is Ried, R-I-E-D. And this also has to be stated on the label, the word Ried, in front of the actual vineyard name. And this is the top of the pyramid. And then I'm a member. This is, for instance, one of the wines we are going to taste. We're going to taste both the Grüne Veltliner Terrassen and the Grüne Veltliner Obere Steigen. And so you can see Grüne Veltliner is the grape, Triesental is the appellation, and then Terrassen in this case is a brand name because this is our estate wine. And I told you we have 120 individual vineyard sites, and of course we cannot bottle 120 individual single vineyard wines. So all those wines which do not go into the single vineyard bottlings, they go into our estate wine, the Terrassen. And Obere Steigen is a wine from a specific Cru. And when I was talking now about the single vineyard wines, the Rieden wines, my winery is a member of a prestigious association in Austria, the Österreichische Traditionsweingüter. This is like the leading white wine producers along the Danube area. And within this association, in 1992, there was a process started where the vineyards have been classified along the Danube area. And here you can see the Triesental, it's again on the south of the Danube, and where you see those purple little spots, these are the classified Erste Lage or Premier Cru vineyards in the Traisental. Currently, there is about 60 vineyard sites all over Austria. And in the Traisental, we have four. And we actually make wines out of these Premier Crus from all four individual vineyards. Very bad image. Now about the first wine, which is in the tasting. It's the sparkling rosé. I told you we make a little bit of rosé and sparkling wine, and this is a blend of Zweigelt and Pinot Noir, and it's made a Metto Charmar, so it's tank fermented. And we do that for two reasons. First, by using the Metto Charmar, it enables us to have a really aromatic and style for a rosé, and also a very juicy style on the palate. This will be different when we do a sparkling wine with Méthode Traditionnel, which we do for a Grüne Veltliner, for instance. But for the sparkling rosé, we chose the other way because this is also wine, which is, I think, at a very nice price point. And at this price point, and it has a very good quality, and it's characterized by the bright aromatic. And it has been a real success for us. You can also see that the packaging is quite feminine, I would call it. And it has been a very nice success for us in many, many countries. And since it is a Metto Charmar, we cannot name it as a vintage designated wine, but it always is a wine from only non-vintage, even if we have to declare it as non-vintage. But on the back label, there is always a sign where it says volume 18 or volume 19, and this actually describes the year of the vintage when the grapes were harvested. But by law, it's for Charmar in Austria, it's not allowed to call it a vintage wine. Okay, and then I actually have to go back. Sorry for this now. I think wine number two is the Riesling Terrassen, which we are going to taste. I will share a screen again.
Sorry, wine number two is the Vision.
It's the Vision. Okay, sorry. Then I have to go a little further back. Sorry for this. Yeah, here it is. Yeah, so the Vision. The Vision is a wine which comes mainly from our own vineyards, but we also have some grape growers, neighbors from our vineyards, where we have long-term contracts. And we use those grapes and some of our grapes for this particular wine. And the name Vision stands also for the vision, you know, to contribute to a better future and to a better environment. And this is why we named it Vision. And there is also a very personal story to this wine, because a vision, you know, it has to do also with, of course, with a vision, and the vision you can have in your head, or you can have a vision when you look around. And actually the iris you can see on the label, this is the eye of my wife, and it's our both vision to contribute to a better environment in the future. And it's also written a little bit on the back label. But the wine itself is a prototypical Grüne Veltliner from Austria, bone dry. It has a very nice fruit and a very nice aromatic. And we always aim for a moderate alcohol, 12, 12.5. The wine is fermented in stainless steel. And then it also kept on the lees for about 3 to 4 months after the fermentation. And this is the introductional level of Grüne Veltliner. So I think it's always important to have a wine like this in your portfolio, because for many fellows, a Grüne Veltliner is still something maybe they might have heard about, but they've never tried one. And if the entry level Grüne Veltliner starts at $30 retail, it might be quite a stretch for some people to go for that. But if you have a wine available at a decent price point, the people they are not so shy to try that. And this is why we brought that wine also to the market. Yeah. Okay, and going forward, showed you this already. We go, next one is the Grüne Veltliner Terrassen. So as I said, Terrassen is a vineyard, is a wine from all our own vineyards, all organic farmed. And the age of the wines of the specific vineyards we use for the Terrassen is between 15 years and it's hard to believe 80 years are the oldest parcels, because all the younger vineyards we have, they go into the vision. And soon if the vineyards reach an age of about 15 years, we consider them to be adults, and then they can go into a so-called estate wine. And we have parcels which are really old, but they are so small that we cannot do anything with them separately. And therefore these vineyard parcels also go into Terrassen. And this is why we have such a stretch and in age. And what it does is also with the mix of younger vineyards and older vineyards, and of course all these different parcels, it enables us year by year to produce a more or less consistent style with that wine. Because if we have a very early year, we have parcels where we know they are a little higher up or a little bit more east facing, which are cooler sites, and we can bring acidity from these parcels to the Terrassen blend. And if we have a very late ripening year, we know we have vineyards which are early ripening closer to the Danube, further away from the foothills of the Alps, and they might contribute weight and complexity. And this is the beauty about an estate wine. You know, we also harvest all these parcels individually over a time period about, I would say, two weeks at least, in some years up to 3 weeks. And after the harvest, we put all those different batches on the table and we taste, and then we will create the Terrassen blend. And that gives us really a good opportunity to make a more or less consistent style with this particular wine. It's found in many restaurants in the United States by the glass. This is, I think, our strongest item by the glass, because what Grüne Veltliner has in general is that it is a very food-friendly wine. It has the ability to go with dishes which are hard to pair. Vegetable dishes, for instance, dishes with asparagus or artichokes. I think now the season is right around the corner. And or you can just have a Grüne Veltliner by itself on the patio on a nice warm spring summer day. This is what a lot of Grüne Veltliner is drunk in Austria, as a kind of aperitif, or just a nice glass of wine which has a certain refreshing character. Okay, moving to the next level of Grüne Veltliner. It's the Grüne Veltliner Obere Steigen. And Obere Steigen is a Cru name. I mean, I have to go a bit more into the details now. It was a Cru until 2011. And in 2011, there was a reclassification of many vineyards in Austria. And for instance, in my village, we have had 14 Crus before, and then it was merged down to 3 Crus. And Obere Steigen was one of these crews which only we were using, so it fell under the table. But we continued from these particular vineyards to make that wine, because already my grandfather called it Obere Steigen. So as an honor to my grandfather, we continue with this wine and still call it Obere Steigen, but it's a brand, but it still comes from these particular vineyards. And the name of the former Cru Obere Steigen has an interesting story, because Ober means above, and steigen is a German word for a path or way. And we have had two Turkish invasions in Austria, one in the 15th and one in the 17th century. And what happened during these invasions, the people were really scared about the Turks, and they started to dig a tunnel system from the center of the village underneath the vineyards as escape ways into the forest. And obere steigen basically means above the path. So these are the vineyards above the escape path. And this path still exists partially today. I mean, in some areas it's broken down, but in some areas you can still see it. And just like a couple of years ago, my brother was driving with the tractor and it was a wet year. And all of a sudden it made a loud noise and one of the tunnels underneath was collapsing and the tractor and the sprayer were falling into the tunnel. And it was huge. It was like a small cathedral, like a 4 by 4 meters and like 3 meters in height. And this was actually a tunnel where two ways crossed underneath the vineyards. And this is where the name comes from. And what differentiates now the Grüne Wedine Obere Steigen from the Terrassen? Since this is from a Cru, we harvest the grapes later, about 2 weeks later. And what it does, it just, in many years, the alcohol is not significantly, not very much higher, maybe 0.5%. But what it does, of course, if you have the ability to age the wine, the grapes longer on the wines, you will have a higher physiological ripeness and you will have more yellow and ripe, like ripe pear elements in the wine. So it's a much more refined and more not necessarily powerful, but a wine with more character. And I think this is also nice to see now these three different types of Grüne Wediner side by side and see the evolution within the grape variety. And then on top of the obere steigen, the next level would be to go into the erste Lage or single vineyard wines, the classified wines. And these are then vinified completely different because all the three Grüners we had so far, they are vinified in stainless steel, which is more or less standard now in Austria. But on the erste Lage wines, we make them in a more traditional way. We ferment them in large traditional acacia wood casks. Acacia is a wood which is used mainly for white wine because it has one big advantage. It's a neutral wood and it does almost give no wood taste to the wine. It just allows a certain amount of microoxidation. And this enables the wines, the single vineyard wines, to age really beautiful and have a long lifespan on the wine shelf or in the cellar. Good. And then we have one Riesling left to taste. The Riesling is the Riesling Terrassen. And again, same concept as on the Grüne Wediner. The Riesling comes from about 15 different Riesling parcels. Age of the wines is similar between 10, 15 years to 50 years, the oldest parcels for the Riesling. And again, it shows and it stands for the very prototypical style of Triesenthal Riesling. And Austrian Riesling in many cases is really very, very dry. So it's also in our case, the wines are, if you compare them to Germany, they have a little bit more alcohol because we are further south on the European map. But then they are fermented really dry. So this they have character, they have power, and but they have a nice refreshing element to them as well. Okay, I think yeah, this is again about the erste Lage wines. Yeah, maybe for those of you who haven't seen that, if you look, this is a good example about the declaration of the wines. Grüne Wediner is the grape variety, and Ried, the word Ried, is the German word for Grü, like in France, cru, or you would call it a site in English. And then you have the vineyard name, for instance, Altersetzen or Zwirch or Berg. And this is the sign for erste Lage for premier cru. So whenever you see a wine on the shelf with this sign, you can be sure it's a very good quality, no matter it's from which producer it is. I think I'm done with the presentation, and let's go into the questions.
Lovely, thank you so much for that very thorough and thoughtful presentation on the winery and your wines. We do have a couple of questions. So I'm not sure you mentioned being a member of the Traditional Vineyards of Austria program. Are you still a member of it?
Yes, yeah. It's called Österreichische Traditionsweingüter.
Excellent. So how does being a member benefit a family-owned winery such as yours?
It benefits in a way that the association itself does help, for instance, big tastings where we bring in international journalists to try these Erste Lager wines, these Premier Cru wines, and this is an advantage of the association in terms of the marketing, but also looking inside, it's also the exchange with my colleagues, because all the people who are members in that association are very good winemakers, and there is a good and fruitful exchange, which helps everybody, I think.
Thank you for that. Then this is, we're running a little bit low on time, but I have a feeling this question will get you to eat up the rest of the time that we have. How do you see your winemaking philosophy integrating with the evolving winemaking trends in Austria? And what do you forecast those trends to be?
In general, I think we are on the pulse of the time, because organic is for the quality-oriented producer or biodynamic, I think is the way to go for many, many very good wineries and winemakers. And what we also see is a movement to be very experimental and try new things. For instance, making natural wines, pet nuts, whatever. And so we do, for instance, we have a natural wine which we ferment in a concrete egg on the skins. And this is, I mean, maybe this will never become, at least for us, a huge segment of the market, but what it does, it enables us to have a playground where we can play around and experiment and try new things which we couldn't try or wouldn't try with our classical estate wines, because they should reflect their origin, and the origin is always defined over a longer period of time within a region, and therefore we are very, I wouldn't call it conservative, but we are very traditional with these particular wines. But with the natural wines, there is a lot of excitement and movement, and we can try many, many new things.
Well, you mentioned natural wine, which is a controversial topic here in the wine industry. How would you define natural winemaking, and do you consider yourself to be a natural winemaker?
Actually, you know, Austria is one of the very few countries in the world where we actually have now natural wine in the wine law. There is a definition what a natural wine has to be, and limits of sulfur and things like that. Am I a natural winemaker? It's a hard question. I mean, for the vast majority, I would say no, because the majority of wines we produce, they are very traditional for the region and also in terms of the history. But on the other hand, of course, we experiment with wines like this, but our winery does not stand for natural wines only. I think this is not the picture where as we are seen like a like some other people around the globe, you know. But it's a very fruitful contribution to the industry overall.
What is organic?
Yeah, sorry. Antoinette, I lost you now for a second.
What does organic winemaking entail? How does one farm organically? What does that mean in comparison to conventional winemaking and vineyard management as a whole?
So in organic winemaking in Austria, it's for instance, in terms of the spraying, you can only use either sulfur or copper, or you can choose to use none of these two and use herb extracts and stuff like that, what we have started trials with now. And in conventional farming, you can use the full spectrum, what the agro chemical, like Bayer, you know, those companies have available. You know, it's a much easier approach because you basically can spray ahead of the game versus and even if something happens, you always have like a, call it a vaccine available to help the plant. And with organic farming, what I told you before, you have to be much more careful and try to have a very healthy environment and a healthy plant, that if the diseases like the powdery or downy mildew are around, that it's not so easy for them to affect your crop.
Excellent. And we just had a guest join us, the importer Bartholomew Broadbent. So thank you for popping in, Bartholomew. If you would like, we can follow up or finish up the class by asking you a question. Bartholomew, what do you think the future of Austrian wine will be moving forward? And how do you think the trends will change for the country?
Well, I'm very sorry that I'm late. I've had a crazy day. I wanted to be here on time, but I apologize. But Marcus knows me well, and he'll forgive me, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm incredibly optimistic about the future of Austrian wine. I think that, you know, Americans have discovered Sauvignon Blanc, and they love Chardonnay, and the way that I describe Grüner Veltliner is the crowd pleaser that pleases both. If I'm recommending a wine for a dinner or a function, a big event where they only really want a red and a white wine, I'll always say go for the Grüner Veltliner because the people like Sauvignon Blanc like it, and the people like Chardonnay like it. I think it's the perfect wine, and it can be drunk on its own, or it can be drunk with food, and it goes with almost all foods, I mean, within reason. And so I think it's very good, and Marcus is now making some really good Pinot Noirs, which are improving year upon year, and I think we're going to start bringing that in soon, I hope. So really exciting stuff. And Marcus, you know, full disclosure, he actually also, in addition to the Huber wines, he also makes our wine, our Broadbent Grüner Veltliner, which we sell in liter bottles. And so the partnership with Marcus is beyond just representing his wines. It's a true partnership. But I think Austrian wines, the future couldn't be brighter. There's nothing negative about Austria. I mean, look at the colors behind Marcus and Jacob. It's green. It's kind of like, if you think of New Zealand, what color comes to mind? It's either blue or green. And the same with Austria. It's all happy memories and happy imaginations and happy colors. And so I think it can only be a really positive future, and it's this type of wine people like to drink. Sorry to go on.
No, on the contrary, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. Well, we're wrapping it up for tonight. Thank you all so much for joining us, all of our panelists, and for everyone watching. Marcus, before we say goodnight to everyone, do you have any final words for the group?
I think Bartholomew just brought something up, which I forgot to say. Austria really is green, not that the colors behind me look green. Austria as a country, and I think this is quite something substantial, has the highest percentage of organic farming in the world. It's 25% of our total agricultural land is farmed organically by now, and it's still increasing year by year. And you can see also, for instance, our country has written down that by 2040, we have to be completely energy autark or neutral by green energy. And I think this is, even if we are a small country, it's something which sets the way for the future. And luckily also the United States are back on that track as well. And I think overall, if we all stay together and work together, we can make it a better world.
Agreed, 100%. Well, thanks again for this incredible presentation and introduction to your winery. And we appreciate everyone for taking the time to join us this evening, but also for your interest, broadly speaking, of the great wines of Austria. We encourage everyone to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the Austrian wine events we are hosting with some of the region's greatest producers, including the one we had this evening. Marcus Huber, thank you so much. Bartholomew, thank you for importing these wines. And we will see everyone later. I'm going to end the meeting for all. So have a wonderful night. Thank you again for joining us. Thanks.
Goodbye. Good.